Hello, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Radio Show, where we invite you to explore the journeys and insights of industry leaders shaping our world today. Thank you for joining us, and please make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel under the Celeste Stein Show and bbsradio.com to stay in the know with all of our latest episodes. I hope that you will also please like, share, and subscribe and interact with my platform under all of the most popular social media channels. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and today we're joined by a remarkable guest who has more than 40 years of professional industry experience in the transportation and logistics industries. Jim Bramlett has certainly worn many hats, from serial entrepreneur to executive leadership coach, and is now in his current role as chair at Vistage, the world's largest executive coaching organization. Known for his unconventional approach to leadership and business simplification, Jim has a proven track record of guiding companies to success by eliminating organizational hassles. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Celeste, I'm just thrilled to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Definitely happy to have you here on this fine, beautiful day here today. Anyway, I wanted to ask you to start by telling us about your journey in the transportation and logistics industry. What actually initially drew you into the field?
Well, I was talking to somebody not long ago that back. You can see the gray hair. Anyway, when I graduated a long time ago, the only one interviewing on campus at that time was Walmart. And I made a foolish decision not to interview with Walmart because I thought, well, I don't want to be taking returns of toasters after spending 4 years in college. Had I gone that course, yeah, who knows what would have happened. So anyway, I had a friend who introduced me to an opportunity at a company called Roadway Express as a management trainee. And I went out, interviewed, got hired, and I loved it because no day, no hour was the same. There was something always different. And I'm always fascinated that when I would see some freight, wow, that a day or two ago was on the East Coast, and 2 days from now it's going to be on the West Coast, and all of the inner workings that had to happen to make that happen just fascinated me. So I was stuck right there. I couldn't envision myself on a very repetitive, job, and it wasn't that at all. So that's why I got into it, and I stayed.
Yeah, can you sort of define for our audience, what logistics is? I happen to have a child that works, a grown child that works in the logistics industry and has done that for Amazon and some other companies. But for those people who might not know, can you kind of describe what that was all about for you?
Yeah, logistics, very interesting, because when I started, that term was a military term. Hadn't infiltrated the civilian life, but it became popular. And it's all about having the right product, the right information at the right time in the right place. And transportation is kind of a segment of that, but you could also consider supply chain part of logistics. And supply chain meaning, hey, I've got to find vendors, and I've got to buy, and I've got to have it shipped and processed. And so logistics is just all about that movement of data and movement of product being in the right place at the right time. That's how I like to describe it.
Yeah, so interesting, and how much things have changed since you have big companies like Walmart, like Amazon that have entered into that space, and just to see some of the changes on the horizon, which we're going to get into in just a few minutes when we talk about AI and how that might be impacting things. I'm going to ask you about that in just a minute. But I wanted to also talk about your transition from working in that industry to becoming a serial entrepreneur and founding multiple companies. What led to tell me how one thing maybe led to another.
Well, yeah, I had spent well over 20 years in the logistics and transportation industry, and I don't know why I started fiddling with an idea and ultimately put that idea pen to paper, and I got very enamored with it, and I started floating it to a couple friends. Hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? And they liked it, and that led me to go, I think I can make a company out of this. And, you know, maybe like a lot of people, I thought jumping off into your own enterprise, being your own boss, that sounded very attractive. Because you know what? You don't know what you don't know.
Good point.
You don't know the challenges, but it all sounds like, oh man, this is going to be great. I'm going to be my own boss. This is going to explode. It's going to be awesome. And you don't think about the negative side of that. But because I got affirmation from others that I respected that they thought the idea was good, I took the leap. I said, okay, I'm going to go do this. And what was funny or interesting was what I wrote on paper did not at all become the business I launched. It was close, but not the same thing, but I made it work. And I ultimately, at the time, this was at the, when the dot-com hysteria in 98, 99. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really made an impression upon me that I, on the front street of the Wall Street Journal, there was an article about a 23-year-old MBA who had started furniture.com, 23-year-old, and he was in talking to Silicon Valley venture capital firms, and they were bidding on investing, and he was taking bids. And I'm sat there thinking, okay, really, what does a 23-year-old MBA student really know about the furniture business? I've been in the transportation logistics for over 20 years. I know it very well. So even though I'm not in Silicon Valley, with my experience and this plan and all the money that was flying back then, this should be pretty easy. I'm going to go out and raise capital. Of course, it wasn't at all easy. In fact, I went out and talked to some capital sources, and what they were looking for was traction. Okay, I like what you're telling me, but We don't give money unless you have business in hand. So I had to go out and drum up business, and I did. And once we got that traction, then I was able to get some funding, which enabled me to hire people, build the systems, and really take off with it. So, but it wasn't at all what I'd written on paper.
was that the biggest challenge you faced? Was it the financing, like many small business to medium to large business owners faces the funding, but was there anything else that was a major challenge for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting that first customer, because I have no track record. This is a brand new company. I'm in Kansas City. My first customer was in Chicago. Now, fortunately, I had a friend who worked at this company, and he made the introduction. So I had some credibility because I got, you know, I was endorsed by my buddy, but he didn't make this decision. Get introduced to those who can make the decision, and they gave me a shot. And for that, I'm forever grateful. And okay, well, now it's in Chicago. And one of my biggest challenges, well, I'm in Kansas City. I'm not moving to Chicago. Well, now I have to go find somebody to manage this in Chicago. And the same thing happened. Who are you? You have no track record. Why would I come to work for you? Well, I have this vision. I have this dream. And you can be part of it. You can be on the ground floor. And again, fortunately, this young lady had faith in me, liked what we were doing, and joined. So she was able to manage the account while I was able to come back to Kansas City to build the infrastructure and the rest of what needed to happen. But that was a challenge. Yeah, big
Yeah, it
time.
sounds like it, man. I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to you a little bit more about Vistage, what that is, and your work as a chair there. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back right after this.
Looking to amplify your brand's voice? Look no further than Bishop Stein and Associates, your premier PR powerhouse. From targeted advertising to innovative marketing solutions, we're here to elevate your brand. But wait, there's more. Are you a strong speaker? Join our exclusive speakers bureau and share your expertise with the world, or book our top-tier talent for your event. Whether you're launching a product, rebranding, or seeking expert speakers, Bishop Stein and Associates delivers results. Transform your brand today. Visit us at bsaprinc.com and discover how we can amplify your success today. Bishop Stein and Associates, your strategic move.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Celeste Stein Show on bbsradio.com. We're live here with Jim Bramlett. And Jim is a chair at Vistage. And Jim, I wanted you to explain to our audience what Vistage is, how long it's been around, and how you actually work to help leaders.
Sure. So Vistage is the world's largest business leader peer group organization. 45,000 members worldwide, operate in 30 countries. And basically, these 45,000 break up into groups of somewhere between 12 and 18 non-competitive leaders, and they form a peer group. And I facilitate a group. I have 12 either CEOs, presidents, or owners, but they're the decision makers for their business. And I'm a big believer in peer groups. And when I started this journey, I reflected back to we don't know this, but we do this when you go to college, you graduate, maybe you get married, next thing you know you have kids. Well, when you bring your child home from hospital, they don't give you a manual that says, here's all the things you need to do over the next 20 years to raise this child. Yes, you can lean on your parents, but they're from a different generation. They don't live with you, they're not in the day. So what ends up happening, you form friendships with other parents, and you lean on each other. Hey, Junior's having this problem. How do you deal with? So you form this informal peer groups. And so throughout life, I believe, if whether you're on a ball team, in a classroom, you end up having peers. And Visage is a formalized way to, as a business leader, join other like-minded and trusted leaders that you can lean on. Things aren't always rosy as a leader. A, it's pretty lonely at the top, and B, you got to make a lot of decisions, and you can do that in a silo. You can do it with your team, but your team has maybe their own agenda, and so leaning on other like you, other leaders, to say, "Hey, I've got this important decision. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you think?" It becomes invaluable for them. They make better decisions quicker by getting other feedback from people in a somewhat similar situation, not industry, but maybe a somewhat similar. So that's what Vistage is all about. It's part educational. You said we're going to talk about AI. We spend a lot of time talking about AI, the educational piece, but it's also enhancing leadership, training, and abilities. No, a lot of people don't go through any kind of leadership training. When I started my first company, my leadership experience was a class president of 13. So I was not a leader. And I was a visionary. I knew where we wanted to go, but now I've got to manage people. And I maybe did okay, but what I did, I led like how I had been led. That's just hand me down. I had never had formal training. Well, how do you really lead and inspire people to go to great heights? And so it became a real learning experience for me. So part educational, part helping each other. bonding together to make better decisions and grow. That's what we're all
and
about.
And how did that come about? Did you have an epiphany one day where you're like, you know, this is hard. You know, how can we make this better? You know, is that how you got involved in it? Or, you know, what led you to this?
Yeah,
teaching?
Very interesting story. So I started a second company about 7 years ago. And I was leading that. Well, my wife had retired. And once she retired, and I'm still day to day in the grind, you know, she starts poking me. Hey, honey, remember all those things we're going to do in our golden year with the trips and the travel? And, you know, when are you going to retire? And I go, well, I'd always told her my idea of retirement was doing something I loved and having somewhat of a flexible schedule, not punching the clock every day. But I really liked being involved. Well, guess what? She poked long enough and hard enough that I finally found somebody else to take over the company. And I retired in March of 22 for 3 months. And I found very quickly there's no purpose in pickleball, golf, and tennis. I'm the kind of guy that's got to have purpose.
Yes.
Fortunately, I was contacted by Vistage, and I had never heard of them. And when they told me what they were about, how they support leaders in peer groups to help educate and enhance their leadership abilities, I immediately reflected back to that first time when I had raised that venture capital, and now I'm the visionary, but no, I'm the leader, and how much I struggled. And I thought, man, I wish I would have had peers back then that I could have leaned on. Because I had a board of directors, and you don't take issues to the board because they're going to say, well, we don't have the right person in the chair. So if I had issues, I just kind of had to deal with it. And I would have loved to have had peers to say, here's what I'm dealing with. Have you ever had that experience? What would you do? What would you recommend I do? That would have been invaluable. So when they told me what they were about, I go, oh my gosh, this could give me purpose. If I can help any other leader not go through what I went through when I started that company, there's purpose there. And I called a buddy of mine who owns a small trucking company in Kansas City. And I said, Mike, I got this call from Vistage. I've never heard of them. Have you? And he started laughing. And I said, Mike, why are you laughing? He said, because I've been a member for 5 years, and it's the best investment of time and money I've ever made on myself. And I go, wow, unsolicited testimonial. Did more research, top notch. Everything that I researched was top notch. And I said, I think the stars are aligned, and I'm gonna try and do this. And Celeste, it is by far the best thing I've ever done. It's the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my career. And I've had a nice career in transportation logistics. But the feeling I get when I can help somebody else think through and just make progress, that serves purpose for me.
And that's, I think, you know, you're hitting on something there. That's really what it's all about. How you can actually, I mean, why are we here? And really, I think when you figure out a life of serving others, that's what tends to be fulfilling for a lot of the people that I've talked to. Wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the evolution that we've seen in the transportation and logistics industries over the past, you know, four decades. When you follow it and you think back, what, if you could pinpoint, like, say, the top three things that have really been major in terms of how things have changed, what would they be?
Well, number one was when I started in the industry, it was regulated. I mean, the Interstate Commerce Commission regulated pricing, where you could service. They regulated everything. Well, shortly in 1981, after I started, they deregulated, and that was monumental. And there were a lot of companies who could not survive a deregulated environment where you were free to price as you saw, you could service any territory, you could provide any level of service you want, and they couldn't survive. And then once pricing became deregulated, and you could negotiate and set pricing with any form, mode of transportation and carrier that you wanted, the pricing is very complicated. And so technology, back really at the, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, technology in the form of what's called transportation management systems came out, helping people understand what their cost was going to be, what their options for shipping were, be it expedited, you know, UPS, FedEx, what you could make better decisions. And then the technology expanded from there to where you got more robust visibility on shipments. And I like to, you know, everybody today probably is pretty spoiled. They buy from Amazon and you get very detailed information about where your order is and projected when it's going to be delivered. Well, 15, 20 years ago, that wasn't there. You didn't know when your order was going to hit. So it's really becoming a much more technology-driven industry, enabling the customers to get far better control and grasp of what's going on relative to their costs and relative to knowing where their orders, shipments are, be it outbound, inbound, and the like.
How do you see that kind of changing? What can we expect kind of going forward? What do you, you know, I know, you know, that would be sort of your thoughts on it, but what do you think we're going to start to see as far as changes in the industry kind of going forward from this point?
There's been some evolution of consolidation in the industry. For example, in small package, everybody knows UPS, probably FedEx, and the post office. Okay, well, there's a lot of smaller regional players, but the smaller players don't have the scale that the large guys do. But one of the biggest trends I see is where a lot of transportation companies have a singular focus. This is what we do. We are a truckload provider and we only go from Texas to Wisconsin. And well, okay, that's pretty limiting. So we see the evolution of what's called third-party logistics providers who are set up to handle anything for the customer. You've got air freight, you've got ground, and being able to do more turnkey solutions. And I'll give you an example. So I'm very knowledgeable in the final mile space, and with the evolution of e-commerce, everybody said, oh, I love having orders brought to my home, especially large items, treadmills and appliances and the like. Well, it's one thing to deliver a treadmill to your driveway, but the consumer says, no, I need that brought into my house and I want it set up and I want the trash hauled away. Well, in the past, you might have to hire one or two or even three providers, one to do delivery, one to bring it inside, set it up, and maybe another to haul the trash. That's all now. The services are all being turnkey, so that it makes it easier on the consumer. They say, I'm buying a treadmill and I want the complete service. And that's far more available today than it used to be. So I see a continuing evolution to where providers can offer you anything, domestic, international, small package, truckload, whatever you're shipping through a single provider. That's where we're really heading in a pretty quick way.
But what about pricing? You know, because as a consumer, I'm always concerned that pricing just seems to keep going up. You can look at what's happening in grocery stores across America and you're like, wow, look at egg prices. Look at, you know, basic staples, you know, the pricing has gone up. Now, some of that obviously is going to be tied to gas prices. So do you see those prices sort of leveling off, continuing to rise, or could they go down? And what's your thought rationale behind that?
Yeah, you're right. Energy prices, you know, fuel. The other is equipment. Equipment prices have skyrocketed over the last 10 years. And then labor. Labor is probably the biggest part in a transportation. And so, mm-hmm. you know, in the transportation logistics space, it's somewhat infiltrated by unions, and they've got their scale. But then if you're non-union, you got to keep up there. And so that cost of living goes up. So it's all about efficiency. And this is where a lot of technology comes to play is, well, how do we optimize routes? Okay, so that it's more efficient. We can get two more stops per day, which cuts cost. Okay. Now, if you really want to dream, and nobody's doing this yet, but look in your neighborhood. Look how many trucks go up and down the street. You got Amazon, the post office, UPS, FedEx, maybe the furniture store. They're all running the same neighborhoods, but maybe with just a couple stops. What if we were smart enough to say, we're going to have a single provider cover this neighborhood, a separate provider cover that neighborhood, so that they get all the density and all that efficiency, which lowers that delivery cost. That's a huge dream. Will it ever happen? I don't know. But it's that kind of innovation, I think, that you've got to have if you, because I agree with you, shipping costs are going, I mean, in anymore. I don't know, you ship anything and it's like $10 and it doesn't have to weigh a pound and it costs you $10, which seems like a lot of money.
Now, do you see AI coming into play in your industry here, or could it make anything better? How is it being used currently?
I think
Questions.
AI it has unlimited potential. Number one, the transportation logistics industry is still fairly manual. People are having to call their provider. Hey, where is my shipment? Hey, my shipment got damaged. I didn't get charged correctly. There's a lot of human interaction between customer and provider in transportation and logistics. I believe over time, AI and AI agents, now I'm really getting into agents, they can play the part of some of the people that are involved in the customer service people from a provider having to answer that, calling. They should be able with AI to proactively send out a lot of information. AI, I believe, is a foundation for optimizing those routes and being able to predict what's going to happen. Logistics transportation is pretty cyclical. It's heavy in fourth quarter during Christmas, Thanksgiving season when people are buying a lot of product. We can predict weather. And so when you can start predicting volumes and weather, you can start making much better, more robust decisions. So I think AI is going to play a huge part of transportation and logistics going forward. Now, the challenge is I think everybody's still very confused on where to start with AI. Okay. And so the challenge is going to be those who want to experiment, they're curious and they want to test, and they have an imagination. Here's what I imagine. And how can AI now start exploring and testing? That's where it needs to go.
Now, I have done a lot of research on AI. In fact, my dissertation was on new media technologies, and AI was included in that. And I know I have watched some footage as well as studied in other countries to see that in the logistics industry, they're testing out like fleets that would not have drivers anymore. It would all be automated, and the cars would drive or trucks would drive themselves and all that kind of thing in the future. And it is being tested. What is that going to mean for the, while it may be good for the company, it might not be so good for the average trucker. Do you see jobs going away?
Well, historically, there's been a tremendous shortage of drivers for the trucking industry. Number one, it's not the most glamorous life, especially if you're an over-the-road driver going coast to coast. That's a hard job, and it doesn't, maybe pay the best. And so that I know a lot of firms who have 100% turnover every year. And so there's just been this push for autonomous trucks that says, hey, we need to, because of the driver shortage, we need to be able to have the technology drive the trucks. Interestingly enough, when I grew up in the transportation world, we were always pushing for heavier trucks, heavier, longer trucks. Well, politics said, no, they're dangerous, killer trucks. We don't want that. And so I find it interesting that we don't hear about heavier and longer trucks anymore. We hear a lot about autonomous, but politically it's kind of being accepted. Now the challenge is, the real challenge is, well, how far do you let that autonomy go? Because you know, yes, if it's on the interstate from a rest area to a rest area, I can kind of see that, but maneuvering in the city, making deliveries, you got to have somebody who can unload the freight and right. and back the trucks in and all the things that can go on. So I think there's still a lot to conquer, but I do believe autonomous trucks in certain instances can make an impact on the driver shortage that we have had it probably ever since I've been in the industry.
Right. That's a really interesting thought about there being shortages, like in the nursing profession. There are a lot of professions where there are shortages. But one of the things, though, that I guess eventually if everything is automated, I think back to, you know, when we were dealing with the coronavirus and there some of the logistics came to a complete standstill in different countries, you know, where the trucks were just backed up and products weren't getting in or out. Obviously, having self-driving cars and that kind of thing or trucks could help some of, you know, alleviate some of that. But do you foresee any major issues with that?
Yeah, it's like the self-driving cars. If there's an incident, mm-hmm. God forbid they hit a pedestrian or have a wreck, everybody goes, okay, time out. We've got to park these and we've got to figure it out for a long time. I actually believe the first breakthrough will be in the autonomous taxi, Lyft, Uber. You know, based on what I read and understand, I think they're having pretty good success with that. I know there are some autonomous vehicles, say in the mining industry, like dump trucks. You know, I fill a dump truck and then it's programmed to go dump it, you know, a half a mile away and that kind of thing. I'm a little old school, so I see it. I have a tough time seeing it's going to be adopted in such a wide ranging fashion to really alleviate a lot of the challenge that the trucking industry has. But it's pretty
I think with anything, you also have to kind of get used to different things. And I mean, it's like the first time I drove in a Tesla, I took a group of young ladies to with the organization called Play Like a Girl. We went to, you know, visit where they made the Teslas and everything. And then we got to go on a test drive. And the person sitting behind the wheels was like, okay, we're getting ready to go, you know, no hands. And then she put her hands in the air and we were going around a curve, probably doing about 80. I was just like, oh my God, you know, like I could not, you know, bring myself to just let go like that, you know, like and be going that fast. But I was like, even worse, I'm sitting here in the back going, oh my God, you know, like, you know, so you have to get used to all of that. But the other side of it is there have been instances, you know, through my research where someone has hacked into the system. We have had that happen where someone hacked in and controlled, you know, a vehicle. So those are going to be other issues that come along with all of this. And I think a lot of times we're not necessarily as prepared as we need to be kind of thinking about all these things that are going to obviously come up as issues in the future. It's only when it happens that people start to think, oh, you know, hey, this could be a problem, right? I want to take a quick break again, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about industry trends and leadership and leadership strategies, etc. We'll take a
Excellent.
moment, and then when we come back, we'll get into that. We'll be back right after this.
Looking to amplify your brand's voice? Look no further than Bishop Stein and Associates, your premier PR powerhouse. From targeted advertising to innovative marketing solutions, we're here to elevate your brand. But wait, there's more. Are you a strong speaker? Join our exclusive speakers bureau and share your expertise with the world, or book our top-tier talent for your event. Whether you're launching a product, rebranding, or seeking expert speakers, Bishop Stein and Associates delivers results. Transform your brand today. Visit us at bsaprinc.com and discover how we can amplify your success today. Bishop Stein and Associates, your strategic move.
And welcome back. We are here with Jim Bramlett, who is a chair at Vistage and offers wonderful leadership and insight to other business owners like himself, and can really provide a lot of insight, wonderful insight on how giving information to those in leadership can really help make a difference in how we're guided in this futuristic world we're headed into. And Jim, I wanted to again thank you for being here. Wanted to ask you if you can share a success story you've had where your unconventional leadership approach really made a significant impact on a company, since you speak with other business owners, on a day-to-day. Tell me about that.
I want to, Celeste, want to, and by the way, I'm just thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I am very passionate about leadership style. Okay. I said earlier where when I became a leader, I had no training. There's not a lot of college courses, I believe, that prepare anyone to lead and motivate and inspire people. You're trained on a technical skill or subject matter expertise. And I use this story. I said, if you are get an accounting degree and you've had a good grade average in the top of your class, you're going to be hired as an accountant, and you do well, you might get promoted to senior accountant. You do well there. Now, the next thing you know, you're accounting manager, and congratulations, here's the six people. You have never been trained to lead, and so you revert to how you were led. Hope you were led well. So I like to segment management into there are the managers who assign tasks, objectives, goals, and they're managing people that way. Some will become mentors. I want to train you on how to do this job better and put them under their wing. I believe the very best leaders are coaches. And coaches inspire others to do their very best. Now, not everybody yet can perform at the same level, but bring out the very best, because you cannot force anyone to do their best. You cannot force anyone to improve. You can't force anybody to be motivated. You have to inspire them. And I believe that's especially true in today's age when you're having to work with multiple generations. I'm a baby boomer. Now, I grew up kind of in, you've heard the carrot and stick. I believe my early days, it was stick. That's what I saw. And I don't think that works today. You again, your job is to motivate. Now, I use this analogy with my Visage group. I said, look, I want you to think about Andy. I'm a big Kansas City Chief fan. I'm in Kansas City. So I said, I want you to think about Andy Reid, okay? Andy Reid has to inspire multimillionaires, okay, to perform at their very best. He can't force them to doing their best. They got all the money they need. And so, I'm just going to show up. And there are certain tricks to doing that, to inspiring people. And one of the keys, and I emphasize this with my Vistage members, coaches talk 20% of the time and they listen 80% of the time. And they're asking the right questions so that the person you're coaching can come up with their own answers. They think it through, because when it's their solution and they're going to go do it, they will. If you say you're going to go do this or else, doesn't work as effectively. Well, most leaders, they naturally want to talk 80, 90% of the time. So getting them to flip that, no, I need you listening 80% of the time. And I need you to be asking open-ended questions, drawing out what that person should be doing, but letting them come up with the answer. That's what real coaches do. And it's hard for people because they've never, ever been trained to be a coach. But that's what I believe the most effective leaders are in today's world.
Well, you know, earlier, I think you kind of hinted at the fact that a lot of the problems in leadership and in management are having to actually lead a team and working with people, right? Yes. So is that the biggest sort of organizational hassle you have when you're kind of working with business professionals, you know, or are there other common organizational hassles that you've seen that really, if they are processes that are streamlined or, you know, standard operating procedures, just kind of getting them down, what are, again, some of the common organizational hassles that you've seen in businesses?
Yeah, I go back to, if you've ever seen the show The Prophet with Marcus Lemonis, when Marcus goes into an organization, he's talking about people, process, and product, the three P's. So yes, that's what I focus on. People, process, and product. Now, I said earlier, in a Vistage group, we are not allowed to have competitors in a group. So I can only have one accounting company, because we want our leaders to open up. What's really going on? What challenges? What issues are you facing? Well, guess what? If you had a competitor in the room, you're not going to talk about your challenge or issue. You know, I don't want to be leveraged. And so we ask them to open up, and we do a thing in the afternoon, and we meet once a month all day to work on their business, not in it. And we do a thing which we call issue processing. Tell us what challenge you're facing that you would like this advisory board of your peers to help you with. Well, invariably, it's at least 80% of the time, the challenges they deal with are people-related challenges.
It's a hard job, isn't it?
It's a hard job to lead people. Can I? Yeah. We talk about the importance of hiring right. You know, the interview process, the questions you ask, do they fit your call? There's a whole litany of process and protocol for the proper hiring, because not all people are coachable. They're just not. Mm. I tell people that I look at it this way. There are people who want the best to be the best. Then there are people who want the most. And if you hire somebody the most, and you had to pay them to get them, well, they're going to leave because of that pay. Okay. Mm-hmm. When they want to be the best, they buy into purpose, they buy into your vision, and they buy into being a team. You can coach those people much more than you can coach those who just want to have the most. Right. And so the issues that we talk a lot about with my leaders are people related. It's so important, especially in today's world. You know, we're coming out of a, and probably still at the tail end of it, where we've never had enough qualified people for the jobs. You know, there's been this gap. Well, you can't settle for a C player. That will come back to bite you down the road. You've got to find A players. That's just what you have. You have to have the right people in the right seat, serving the right purpose, and allowing them to win. And that's the hardest part, is that hiring, putting them in the right position, and dealing with the challenges they present all the time.
Yeah, that reminds me of a saying I adopted quite some time ago. You can't fit the square peg into the round hole. The thing is, I think a lot of people sometimes will bring on people and think they can train them into a position. But what you just said is so important. You kind of have to find that right person that already kind of has the best you can get with the skill set that is needed for the particular role, and get them into that, you know, job. Because if you don't, it's going to take a lot more time to get them up to speed. And sometimes what companies don't have a lot of these days is time. You know, you're already behind many times. And so you have to be looking at those things and asking the right questions in the hiring process, or even doing some assessments in that process to really make sure you're finding the right fit, I think is so, so important. But I'm telling you, I am a teacher by nature. I've spent many years teaching at several different universities across the country. And I'm just going to say I've had to learn that the hard way, because, you know, I want to think everyone can, you know, quickly get this or that. And that's just not the case. People learn differently. And so sometimes it may take a little bit longer, and you have to assess, do you have time to like get that person into a whole training course or what have you? Or are you needing someone who can get started right away? So those are things you really have to think about. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, in terms of getting, as you look at processes that the company may have, how do you actually work with a company to kind of guide them in looking at the process as it is? You know, what is that standard operating procedure? And then breaking that down in a way that might cut steps, save time. You know, how do you kind of go through the whole examination of the process and maybe finding ways to simplify that process?
Great question. I encourage my leaders to map your entire process from marketing to collecting cash. You need to map the entire process. And I would encourage you to have your team, because you as a leader, you probably don't know all the nuances of the process. When you map the entire process, you will then figure out what are the key KPIs for each of those process. And I learned this a couple of years ago. Growth will break processes. That's just natural. So when you have it mapped and you are growing, you will start seeing where you are, where it's negatively impacting, that growth is negatively impacting a process, and you have to make a change. Well, as a coach, you need to have your team fully aware of the KPIs, where the stress points are, and how to adjust the process. But frankly, very few have mapped their entire process, because it's not easy. It is not easy at all, because I've seen processes that stretch, you know, 30 feet along the wall. Because it's a complicated business. Yeah, most of all are. But that's what I encourage them to do, is map your process, know where the key KPIs are, so that you know when you have stress because your growth is breaking one of those processes.
Now, how would you say people need to, you know, maybe employ AI in looking at those processes? You know, could that help? You know, are you counseling people at all on that, and how they may think about using AI within their particular industry?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we started down this journey a year and a half ago, everybody was writing their own job descriptions. And go, whoa, you don't need to do that anymore. Mm-mm. You know, AI, which hits all this data from the internet, will give you a far superior job description Well, you can do the same thing on process, okay? Now, the key is the prompting that you have to do, because you can use generative AI and you should, but you need to know how to prompt to get what you're looking for relative to a process, okay? And I think it's outstanding. Now, whether now what I don't know, Celeste, is will AI produce the diagrams for you at all of a, I don't know, but it will definitely tell you verbiage wise what the best processes are for your particular industry.
Yes, I think it's fascinating some of the things that I'm seeing, within PR, marketing, advertising industry, and how it's being used there, and creatively writing songs, development of poems, and all kinds of things. But the one thing I think we're all agreeing on that it can't do, it's not able to really reach that level of human consciousness. It's basically taking what's already out there, analyzing, a gazillion things, and spitting out from what knowledge is out there. And so I have been approached by a company that asked me to basically like look at the answers that AI is giving, and if it's not correct, to correct the answer, like kind of fix it. So I'm seeing how, it's working, and have had some companies approach, because I mean, even things like writing a solid business letter. I've worked in several leadership roles, and noticed a lot of people who did not know how to put together a basic business letter, or because of all the texting that folks do now, the grammar is not there, the punctuation, that where there should be a capital letter, people just kind of got a little sloppy with all of that. And so, however, there are many instances where a professional business letter or a thank you letter needs to be put together. So AI can certainly help with all of that. But I feel like the majority of people are not necessarily taking advantage of it and what it is actually capable of doing. So I see that being an amazing thing if used in the right way as time goes on. Another thing I wanted to ask you is how do you actually stay updated with industry trends and changes, especially in such a dynamic field like transportation and logistics? I know it seems like a lot is happening. Are there ways in which you are able to stay on top of that? Is it talking to other industry leaders, or do you read journal articles? Just how do
Yeah,
you kind of stay on top of it?
I do. I believe leaders are natural born learners. They're curious. I throw myself in that category. So I subscribe to a lot of industry related, newsletters, and I'm on some LinkedIn groups where I can keep up with going on. I love to network. Keep up with old acquaintances from the industry, but also in general, what's fascinating for me in Vistage, we bring in these subject matter expert speakers on AI, on culture, on marketing, on all kinds of topics, and I get to sit in on every one of them, and I'm learning, and so just between what subscriptions I maintain to keep newsletters coming in, my networking, and the resources available to me through Vistage, I get to keep up, and I love doing that. Keeping up
Have
with
you
AI is the hardest thing, right?
Yeah, for sure. I want to know if you've ever had any major setbacks in your career, and really how you bounce back from
Yeah, so
them.
You struck a nerve, and one of the things I tell my Vistage members, you have to be vulnerable. If you want to
Yes.
learn, you have to be vulnerable. You've got to admit you don't know it all. So I started that first company in 1999, and we were growing. Well, we ended up with a customer that accounted for 70% of our revenue. We didn't design it that way. It happened. We were saving this company a lot of money. We were making decent money, and all was good until they thought they could do it themselves. And we were a third party, and they ended up leaving. And because they were so much of our business, we could not cut the cost fast enough. We ended up having to merge with another company, and I left. And obviously the lesson was don't ever allow yourself to have a customer concentration that significant, because it can put you out of business. And it was quite humbling. It scarred me because I put everything I had into, you know, starting and running and growing that company, and it's your baby. And a lot of entrepreneurs are going to relate to that, right? It's your baby. And when you lose that baby, it hurts. And it hurt for a long time. And I would tell you, for 2 years after that, I swore I would never go back into business, but I did. I did. I'm a serial guy. I just love the excitement and the thrill of taking an idea, nurturing it, growing it, and hopefully having a positive outcome. So, but that was quite a setback for me personally.
Yeah. So what's the most valuable lesson you've ever learned from your 40 years in the industry?
The most valuable lesson. That's a great question. Any and everything that you do is probably going to take longer to realize and be harder than you think. I've put together lots of business plans, ideas, and thoughts, and we can get this done in the next 6 months. We can get this done in the next year. It always, always, like when I told you earlier, when I started raising funding for that first company, I thought, man, look at all the money going around. This will be easy. No, it is, plan on it to be harder and longer. And if you are successful being shorter and easier, good for you. That's a win. But don't plan on it being short and easy. It won't be.
Never. Isn't that the truth?
That's right.
Well, listen, I'm looking. I think we're about out of time. I want to say a huge thank you to our special guest, Jim Bramlett. Jim, thanks. You have been a wealth of information. I'm definitely going to have you back. You've been awesome.
I really appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I learned a lot, and I appreciate you allowing me this opportunity. I'm humbled.
Yes, what a wealth of knowledge and the insight you provided on leadership, entrepreneurship, and the ever-evolving transportation and logistics industry. Your unique approach to simplifying business processes and eliminating organizational hassles is truly inspiring. I again appreciate the time that you took with us today. I want people to know if they would like to book you to speak on leadership at their company or group, you know, they can certainly visit the BSA website at www.bsaprinc.com under Speakers Bureau to book him today. A big thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us today. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and spread the word. If you missed any part of today's episode or want to explore more, please head over to our YouTube channel under hashtag The Celeste Stein Show and subscribe for the latest updates. You can also listen to all of our episodes on bbsradio.com. Love those folks. Thanks for tuning in. Please take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time on The Celeste Stein Show.